The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And apologies, there hasn't been a new podcast for a while. I was traveling in Germany and Austria, so I kind of wanted to use this time now to do a smaller little rambling on my own solo podcast. And soon you will be treated to four different interviews with four different people representing some pretty famous wineries in the German region. And I'm excited to share these with you. It's an incredible trip. And I never take for granted how lucky I am that I've been able to travel twice in the last 6 months to two of the most beautiful wine regions in the world, in Stellenbosch, South Africa, and now the Moselle, Rheingau, Rheinheisen regions of Germany. Certainly, these trips don't happen if it wasn't for the fact that my girlfriend is a flight attendant and we were able to fly standby. By the way, just a quick little note about standby. It's great once you get there. The problem with standby is there's always that small element of doubt. Even when you've been told, no, there's plenty of open seats, you're fine. You still have, at least I do, a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of nervousness of what happens if something goes wrong. I think that's a lot of what you pay for. You know, obviously you pay for the seat and for the jet fuel and everything else. But a lot of what you just pay for when you buy a ticket is, you know, you got this flight. I mean, normally, I guess if you're going at a Pearson, you have no bleeping clue what's going to happen to you. But that certainly helped in terms of offsetting the costs for these two trips. I want to first say I want to apologize because I'm becoming that guy that I used to make fun of, the person in the wine industry that all they do is they rave about Riesling. Now, I've raved about it before, but after spending a week in wine country, after getting in German wine country, in being able to walk through these incredible fields that are as steep as a double black diamond hill at Whistler, and to be able to talk to the winemakers and the winery owners and the history and all of that, I think I'm going to be even worse. I think I'm the complete tired trope stereotype of the guy that says, why aren't you serving, drinking more Riesling? And the usual response is, of course, well, it's too sweet, too much sugar. Let me say this, and one of the winemakers brought up this point, is that, and I think it was from Dr. Lozen, and more on that in a moment, is that some of their philosophy is they don't check about residual sugar. Now, they know what it is, and they know when they're making their wine. Everything is tracked. But the point is, when they're talking about the wines, they never really bring it up. And the philosophy is if you make a good wine, don't worry about the residual sugar. It's not going to taste too sweet. It's not going to overwhelm everything else. Everything is going to be balanced, the acidity, and it's all going to go together and make a great wine. And I really kind of appreciated that because we always, when it comes to German wine, we're always like, well, it's too sweet. And yet far too often, we don't look at how many, you know, grams of sugar per liter are in a lot of the more inexpensive wines that we enjoy, you know, the mass-produced wines, which are important because, you know, we're not rich. We're not drinking $150 bottles of wine every night. You know, sometimes it's a Wednesday. You want that $12 bottle of wine. Well, depending where it is and depending how it's made, it's got a lot of sugar in it as well. But we don't seem to focus on that as much. And also, this one funny thing that I heard from every winery is that so many people come into the tasting room and they say, I only want dry. I only like dry. I only want dry wine. Keep me away from off dry sweet. And the majority of the time, at the end of it, the wines they buy are the off dry. Sometimes the lot of sugar or schlazy wines. And that's the thing, is that whatever your preconceived notion is, I'd say try to drop it if you haven't dipped your toes into the into German Riesling. And just don't worry about sugar. Don't worry about dryness. Just try these wines. I should also say a shout out to the Wines of Germany, Canada. They helped to set up an itinerary. They helped to set up as a go-between so that I could go to a lot of these famous vineyards and these wineries and meet the wine owners. And we went on the trip on purpose during non-busy season, busy season's going to be happening soon. So in these wine regions, there still was wine tourism there. There's people there, but it wasn't packed busy. And that was done on purpose because I don't want to be a bother. But this trip, there was no compensation. And you might hear these interviews and think, wow, Matt, you're really selling these wines. And I am. And I'm selling them because they're really bleeping good. And I want everyone to try them, to expand. And there's a lot of people listening. You already love these wines. So, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. But I want everyone to know that. None of this was paid for. I mean, it'd be great if it was. Hey, you know, if you want to kick me back some money to talk about how much I love Spalletti, I'm all for it. But I appreciated the Wines of Germany Canada for just taking the time. You know, in the end, it's the most valuable commodity is time. I mean, maybe some Grand Cru Burgundies were, you know, worth more than time. But anyway, the point is, they put the effort in to help with the trip. And I just appreciate that so much. And so a couple thoughts here. The first thing is my wine hot take. And if you listen to the first interview with Stefan Pauli from Dr. Pauli Bergweiler, I realized something. My wine hot take is it's time for when you're at brunch to say no to the mimosa and yes to the Moselle. Because so much mimosas, it's just orange juice and bad Prosecco. And it's been a part of our lives, you know, for ages. And the idea is you just want something fruity and not high alcohol. And we always love that. Oh, look at this. It's still feeling like morning and I'm drinking. Look at that. I got booze with my eggs. And, you feel a little naughty. Well, my recommendation is see if they have any Moselle, any Cabernet Moselle. And Cabernet means there's probably going to be a little bit less sugar in it, but who cares about that? Anyway, but these are low, especially Moselle, low alcohol, gentle, a lot of fruit, depth, character going on. And, you know, you can get it for like 7.5-8% alcohol. And the acidity on these wines will cut through and will pair well with most of your breakfast food anyway. And you're going to get a lot more satisfaction in both the nose and in the glass with a glass of Moselle Riesling. And, you know, again, it's low alcohol. You're not going to be drunk off of it before, you know, the waffles arrive. So I say if you're at a restaurant and it's brunch and you see that there's German Riesling, try that over the mimosa. More depth, more complexity, plenty of fruit, low alcohol. Give it a shot. The other thought is, I was at this one winery, and you're not going to hear an interview of the winemaker yet because this is one I'm trying to set up for later. Lights. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, even though it's just Lights. Oh, by the way, that is get ready for that for these interviews. Man, do I screw up names and vineyard names and the different qualifications and the different levels of wine in the scales in Germany. I mess things up, things that I thought I'd be able to really master. But we were at this winery in Rheingau called Lights, and we were trying some of their high-end wines, some of his high-end wines. Single vineyard, you know, low yield, hand-picked, beautiful, beautiful wines. And they're not cheap. They go for around 45 euro. I shudder to think how much that'll be once these wines get to Canada and the cost to ship them and then all the taxes and all the wonderful things that the LCBO does. I remember trying these wines and I was getting as much satisfaction and joy. Like, you know, the joy when you really love a wine and you're like, whoa, what's going on? And you're confused and you're happy and you're laughing and just, I mean, I don't know if that happens to you. It does for me, for like my favorite wines. It's this wonderful moment. And I was getting it with these wines and a bunch of other ones. And I realized something. So if on the low end, my low end message is to remove the mimosa and put in the Moselle. The other one is, if you can no longer afford high-end Burgundy, and by the way, who can afford high-end Burgundy? You know, you're looking Premier Cru, you're looking at mid-hundreds easily for a good Premier Cru Burgundy. And then, and shudder to think, once you get to Grand Cru, you're at $300-$500. So when you're in the mood for that really special bottle of white, I'm going to say it again. It's called GG, the Gross. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Gross Grovax. Even now, I'm screwing it up. Anyway, just my message is for the moments when you want that high end white wine, try some of these versions in Germany, because what do we love about Burgundy? It's just the depth, the complexity on the nose, how it changes in your glass within 15, 20 minutes, where you can spend all this time rhyming off how you get 20 different things on this wine. And you do. And I know you might sound pretentious when you're describing your 17th different thing you get on the nose, but it's all there. And then when you drink it, just the depth of the mid palate, and it's a long finish, and it feels so satisfying in all those emotions. Because that's what a lot of the thing about wine is. It's about emotion, isn't it? You know, the joy you get into it, and you're thinking about the wine, and you're wondering, wow, how is this made? And the cool thing is when you drink a good glass of German Riesling, well, you know that you've earned it. You know that whatever they charge you, they've earned it. Those are steep slopes. So that would be my other message: is if you can't afford $200 bottle of Burgundy, try the $85 single vineyard, probably has some years on it, high end German Riesling. I think you'll find that on the nose and the palate, it'll come damn close, and it's far, far cheaper. So that thought as well. As for the wineries, a couple other things I learned. One thing I found very interesting is, first off, you know the myth, the idea, the stereotype of Germans, you know, quiet or unemotional, detached, couldn't be further from the truth. Whether we were in wine country in Frankfurt or anywhere in between, we had nothing but great experiences as we fumbled around with the 7 German words we knew how to say. And, you know, we went to a couple wineries where they thought our arrival time was different. There was a little miscommunication. Every time, not a problem. Every time winemakers and wine owners are like, hey, don't worry about it. You know what? Plenty of time. Let me take you through. Hop in the Jeep. We're going to go up the hills. People could not have been nicer. Another thing is that in a lot of these wineries, most of the wine is sold outside of Germany, which I found interesting. And there is... And this is going to sound a bit like a generalization. I'm sure it's not all true, but I heard this from a couple of independent people that in Germany, so many people spend their money on cars. And it made sense. Our entire time in Germany, I didn't see one bad car. You know, when you're driving, you're walking around, you see, you know, that real shit box, and you're like, oh my God, I hope I'm not driving behind that because the muffler might fall off, or, you know, that car might just, you know, disintegrate on the highway. Didn't see any of that. Everything was like high end. Everything, you know, and it's a stereotype, but it's true. It was all Volkswagens and Audis and BMWs and Porsches. And what I heard from a couple sources is that for a lot of Germans, they spend all their money on their car, and it costs like 3,200 euro just to get your license. And when it comes to wine, they mostly shop, or they often shop in the grocery store, buying 5 to 8 euro on a bottle of wine. And I mean, that shocked me. You know, again, as a professional uncle, I spend most of my money on wine. But that was something I never knew before. It's one of the cool things about traveling. You get to learn stuff. Also, I didn't know that at the first place at Pauli Burgweiler that Stefan was telling me about how he used to work and sell wine in Texas, and that Texas was a big market. Again, this trip, the theme of dispelling myths, the idea of German Riesling being big in Austin or, you know, Houston or Dallas shocked me. But apparently it goes really well with barbecue. It makes sense. Again, the acidity. When we went to Dr. Lucen. How can I screw that up? We had this incredible tour with the export director, and he'll be in one of the interviews, Matt Goudritis. I mean, it's interesting about Matt is he originally comes from like Arizona. And then eventually, you know, was selling wine in Germany and met his wife there. And now he lives there, and he was kids, and just the different lifestyle between being in Germany versus Arizona. I mean, that was cool. But he had this really great concept about blind tasting and how much that doing blind tasting changed his feelings about wine. And I never heard this thought before, because to me, blind tasting is always intimidating. It is an adventure in humiliation, as you think you've picked the wine and you couldn't be more wrong. And you see videos of Master Somms calling Chianti Bordeaux, and, you know, it's a scary thing. But his point was that when he would do blind tasting, it would sharpen his feelings on the wines he loved and the wines he didn't, because there was no label, no preconceived notion, didn't know how much it cost, because we've all done this. The more expensive a wine is, often we will like it more, or we'll say we like it more, and sometimes we'll convince ourselves to do it. It's like when I saw the first Star Wars movie that came out, The Phantom Menace, and I tried to convince myself it was great because I wanted to love it, because I'm a nerd and I've been waiting for a Star Wars movie since Return of the Jedi. And then a day or so later, I realized, nah, the movie's not that good. What the hell's this Jar Jar Binks thing? And it's the same thing with wine. So I found that to be a very unique thought. So that's one thing that that stood out for me. Axel Pauly, the third person I interview, young guy, has been doing it since like his late 20s. And his quote from his grandfather, which is, steep slope wine growers are heroes. And if you ever are lucky enough to go to the Moselle region, first off, it's breathtaking. It's stunning. You know when you have a vacation or you have something planned and you have the expectations are super high and then you worry. It's like, oh, God, my expectations are really high. I can only be disappointed. Well, the cool thing with this trip was my expectations were super high and they were met. The first time when we drove to the top of the Moselle and stared down at these crazy steep slopes and the Moselle River snaking around in tiny little villages, it was breathtaking. I'll never forget that. And yeah, the people that pick the grapes in those areas, they are heroes. Also, another thing I learned is that if you're working in these vineyards during the day, one of the dangers, your shoes can burn. Your shoes can literally melt because there's all these slates, all the stone, and the stone, it heats up during the day. So, you know, and you can feel it. Like, you grab a piece of slate, and it can be pretty hot. I never even thought about that before. And also, just a bit of history is that wine has been made in this region for 2,000 years, and they have found proof of old, like, Roman equipment. Because like back in the day, soldiers had to actually drink wine instead of water because a lot of the water wasn't good for you. And it was corrupt. It was polluted. It was, you know, so what they would do is every soldier was given a ration of wine. How awesome is that? I don't think I'd be a very good soldier, you know, but again, back then there's lower alcohol. And, you know, if you're going to drink wine and fight, I would, again, recommend Riesling, especially that region. It's lower alcohol. Also, if you hear the interview with Axel Pauly, I get sheepish because, like, you know, he was all for us trying all these different wines, but he didn't have them out, which was fine. But I felt bad because, you know, I don't want the interviews to go too long. So you want to be able to try all the different wines and get him to talk about it and me give my impressions of it. But I kept saying, okay, so can we move on to the next wine? And my guilt took over because I didn't want to ask for it. It's like, hey, can you pour more free wine for me? I mean, even though we're there interviewing and trying to, you know, help sell the wine, still, I don't know, just it feels odd. And then the final interview I did was Nick Weiss from St. Urban's Hof. Nick Weiss. I think I said Weiss and Weiss. I'm trying to sound more German. I mean, I should quit while I was ahead. Of course, I've never really been ahead. And the cool thing with this interview is his father, back in the late 70s, actually went to Ontario, joined up with Cave Spring Vineyards, and you might recognize Cave Spring. It's a big one here in Ontario. And it was among the first vineyards planted with Nick Weiss's father's own his own Riesling Clone 21. Now, let me see if I can say the word. Proprietary. You know what I'm talking about. The point is that if you try Ontario Riesling, there's a very good chance that Riesling in your glass is somehow connected with Nick Weiss and more specifically with his father. Also, this is a cool conversation because he got really philosophical about the notions of minerality and the idea of sustainability. And I've said this before, I don't really care if a winery is organic or not, or biodynamic, and whatever, you know, seal they have. And if they've got it, great. I mean, there's so many good organic, biodynamic wineries out there. I always think about Southbrook as one that always kind of comes to mind for me. But if you are a good winemaker, and if you've been making wine for a long time, you're probably doing something right. And by doing something right, I mean, you're not doing anything wrong to the environment. Some people might think that's naive, but he's got this quote, Nick Weiss, when he says, when people ask me about my idea of sustainability, I always say, when you're doing viticulture in a vineyard that's 1,800 years old, you don't want to be the idiot who ruins it. And that to me says everything. If it's a good winery, if it's been around for a long time, they're treating the vines and the soil and the earth, they're treating it very well, because if they don't, they won't make good wine. It kind of all goes hand in hand. If you have decades and decades of good wine, that probably means the environment is being treated properly. So I never... It never bothers me as much. Before I end this, also a shout out. We visited one winery in Austria, and I'll be setting up interviews with that later on. It's the oldest winery in the country. And what stood out for me was two red grapes that I rarely got to try, Zweigelt and Saint Laurent. And I'll tell you right now, every time I've had Zweigelt in Canada, it's always been trash. At least for me and just my palate. Maybe if someone else has tried something they liked it, great. And maybe I've just tried the wrong kinds. And I think because we just don't get much of it here because it's a hard sell. You imagine you being at a restaurant trying to tell someone, oh, would you like a glass of Austrian red? You know, usually it's, I'll take the Gruner, I'll take the white, I don't know if I'll take the red. Well, at this winery, the Zweigelt and the Saint Laurent were incredible. And they just, they both have these Pinot-esque burgundy characteristics. Not 100%, obviously, but I was... The point is this is the great thing about going on a trip like this, is that when you stand in the soils, you get a better appreciation for the wine and for what you are paying for it. And then also you get to try all these different wines that you don't get to try here in Ontario and Canada. And it is, you know, it allows you to expand your palate, which certainly we were able to do. I went with my girlfriend, Amy, her twin sister as well, Christy, and our good friend, Lindsay. And by the way, they were great to travel with. Could not have been more respectful, and they absolutely loved the trip. But these wines that we got to try, it opened my eyes. And now I want to find more St. Laurent Zweigelt here in Canada. Or I want to get more stuff shipped here because it's really good. I mean, we flew on Air Austria, which, by the way, shout out to them. Great airline. And on the airline, we were drinking Zweigelt, and it wasn't bad. Now, maybe it's just because I was excited for this trip that any wine you poured me I was going to like. But I'm like, damn, if the airplane Zweigelt is good, I mean, how good can the rest of it be? And the answer is really, really good. I think I will end there. I've been rambling for a little bit, but you will start seeing in the next little while my four different interviews, Stefan Pauly, Matt Goudreitis, Nick Weiss, and Axel Pauly. And you'll hear those in the next bunch of weeks. And again, shout out to the Wines of Germany Canada for helping to set this up. Could not be more appreciative. And a trip like this was remarkable. It was bucket list. It lived up to all expectations. And I had a fantastic time. And I hope for everyone listening, you learn a little bit, you enjoy these interviews. And if I can open anyone's mind to just try different versions of German Riesling, from the crazy ultra dry to the you know, the ice vines and then the dessert wines and everything in between, I could not recommend it high enough. I'm not telling you to end up like me where I'm yelling and screaming and crusading for Riesling, which again is such a stereotype, but maybe something a little bit less than that. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I rarely do this. You know, the whole thing where telling people to rate and review and subscribe to the podcast and tell your friends. It's how we grow it. So if you can do that, great. If you don't want to, that's fine. Much like me asking for someone to pour some of their wine. I'm not good at asking for things. And again, remember, you can find the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.